It was safe on Christmas Day. Lucky. And that guy wasn't fish. Wasn't fish.
Why?
What's that English that is? He's only a fish on Christmas Day. So that's not too bad. The turkey. It is not the expression, it's the sentiment behind it that matters. Of course, that I know too well. But you know, I find such interesting people and people's accents. When I was on your side, I used to keep a very keen ear to accents. I used to sometimes deliberately go out of my way to listen to a person. And sometimes I'd make a point of going to cafes and places where I could sit and observe and listen without people realizing it. And I used to be so fascinated in people's conversations and the intonations of their voices. And I used to try and sometimes sitting in a train, not, I hope, being observed or noticed. But nonetheless, I was taking it all in. I was just taking them, trying to give them characters, trying to build up things around them. But sometimes I think, you know, in a sort of subconscious way, I hit upon quite often a true story. You know, it's an extraordinary thing. I don't think any of us could realize it, but you know, we are all very susceptible to conditions. We're very susceptible to thought forces. We're very susceptible to atmosphere, which sometimes we're not always able to account for it, and sometimes perhaps we're rather puzzled. But anyway, I do think that the majority of people, without realizing and understanding it perhaps, are extremely sensitive and psychic to things. I used to, when I used to sit down in my study, when I used to take pen to paper, and I used to try to create and bring characters into being, I would find myself remembering. In fact, I used to keep it in notebooks, and sometimes I'd look about. Perhaps a character would fascinate me as I listened to a next note, and I think that that person would make a very good character in a play, and I would read that person, as it were, into the story, and build up situations, and use some of the actual dialogue that I heard them use, perhaps previously, some days previously, in a restaurant or perhaps in a train. I used to keep my eyes open and my ears open, and I didn't miss very much. You know, I used to take various people as a model. I used to mold them to some extent into my story. And clothes and so on. And I often think, looking back, that I might have done so much more than I did, because I think I missed to some extent a lot of opportunity. But then I think all creative artists feel like that, whether it is an author or a playwright or a musician or an artist in some way. So we do work. We work on something.
Yes.
Full enthusiasm. We build up to it and we create and we take so much from ourselves and we take. And then we're not happy about it. We think the construction is wrong, perhaps, or the plot's not working out as it should be, and all sorts of things into one's mind. And I look back now and I see that quite a number of things that I wrote that were never published. It was rather just a pity that I didn't get back on them and work on them again. I think some of the best things, well, were never published.
Were they okay, right?
Well, I have the reputation in playwriting, and I read quite a bit of Sarawak too. You know, I'm so sorry, my dear lady. This is CBS.
Oh, you know, I thought
that. Dawson, I suppose, if you were to, what you call it now, play this over, and if you turn it, this machine, this remarkable machine, which I must admit, I wish the goodness has been brought into being in my head, right here, it's been a great asset to me and all writers, that people will say, what's happened to VBS? What's happened to VBS? He seems to have lost his Irish accent.
Yes, I know
that is true. I know that people will seem to say that. And I suppose it is that over here, we have, and I'm speaking for myself, there's so much myself in my life here, and in consequence have entered into the lives of so many other people, have become interested in so much that transpired here, and I have realized how much more one can intermix into things and into people's lives, into their minds and so on. So I've become so accustomed to communication by thought that in the process of living and working and having my being here, the Irish aspect or the Irish, you see, one of the first things that we learn to forget here is, I won't be able to use the term stiff, which in a sense is true, and in a sense is not true. Shall we say that one learns here to put oneself further into the background. So one realizes that you are to be a Rubicon eventualist, to merge in life in the fullest sense. And there are many aspects of a human being, especially certain peoples, and I think that, which are a barrier into one's progress, into one's progress here. You must forget many things. One of the things one forgets is nationality, national spirit, national outlook, patriotism, pride, and many of the four failings, and they are deep, they're truthful failings in human beings. When one's on earth, of course, one doesn't think of them in that light. If you are Irish, or Scottish, or whatever it may be, by background and upbringing, it's a normal, natural thing through schooling, and etc. To take pride in one's nationality. I'm not exactly finding fault with this. The only thing is that it is a drawback to human life, to human society, to the well-being of the human race. This rather stupid pride in race. Yes, it leads to wars, leads to unending tragedies. Then, of course, that I don't suggest this is an answer to my losing, or so it appears, my Irish role in school. But at the same time, I suppose it is also to say that I am not in the habit of making communication. And you see, the point is this, that when someone like myself attempts to communicate, I suppose so much more is expected of us. You see, now if I were your Aunt Penny, it wouldn't be so important. You would be quite content with your Aunt Penny telling you about some idiotic something or other that happened 18 years ago, which but to me and the family was hilarious and caused a great deal of amusement at the time. But poor GBS Oh, poor Barry or some other soul wants to come who is noted or reputed to be something so as being a wit, or something of a scholar, should we say, or
yes,
something or other of a character, is expected to put on what you might term a good show.
Exactly.
I'm afraid and thinks, although I may have been a good showman on earth, and not so good at trying to put on a show now, at least from the point of view of the fact that perhaps I'm not so experienced in the space of communication as perhaps your dear Aunt Fanny. Your poor dear Aunt Fanny may be so in the habit of coming to talk to you, and you may have become so used to listening to the sort of dribble that you're probably talking about, that really, I wouldn't be able to compete with her.
I'm sure you wouldn't, because you never used your age and so on. There was no
dribble. Well, I don't know. There was a lot of sense, yes. A lot of nonsense.
Okay.
When you come to think about it, although there was a great deal of sense, there's a great deal of, well, I think some people who in the past rather looked upon me as trying to sermonize. During my earlier years, the critics, some of them, bless their hearts, rather got the impression that I was using my plays to sermonize, and to some extent it was true. I wanted to bring new light onto subjects which appealed to me, which affected me. I wanted people to think for themselves, and think particularly about certain things which at my time, in my time, caused me a great deal of concern. I was concerned with many subjects which of my day were very important, subjects which a lot of people were either interested in or were not very anxious to do very much about. And I tried to bring into my play subjects and themes which I felt would also have a message, which would make people think. You see, I know it's the common thing. I agree, it's a very proper thing that if you go to the theatre, you go to be entertained. But at the same time, if you can be entertained and educated and have certain subjects brought to your notice that may lead to something being done that will benefit people less fortunate, then I think it's a good thing. I don't think that the play should be a sermon. At the same time, I think that it should contain something of merit and something of consequence, something that will make people think, and something that I hope will, to some extent at least, raise the human mind to a higher status, to a higher condition. You know, in the theatre today, when I go, which I admit is very strange, and appalls me, quite frankly, I feel that although here and there may well be different plays and players, generally speaking, I feel that the theatre has really declined.
It has declined.
But I must admit that I'm highly amused as to what they do find they are capable of doing today, from the point of view of using other authors' works and adding music and generally turning a play such as
Yes,
into, I'm not going to complain. I think that in a sense, yes, the music helped it a bit. But I was highly amused. I was very amused indeed, because the play had been highly successful. One of my most successful plays, of course. And then they decided to jig it up a bit.
And
I've made more money, I believe, since they jigged it up with someone else's music.
Well, I can't read it.
Yes. They never did feel it then.
Well,
anyway, I'm very happy to know that the young people today are benefiting from the proceeds of this new reproduction, if I can call it that, of my old works. It's very amusing to think that this is happening. Because you probably didn't see that first bed in your room. It was quite many years ago. The wife had some very amusing, interesting conversations. But you know I'm not supposed to be talking at length to you.
That's all right.
As a matter of fact, I merely came in for a few minutes and it seemed to become sort of a party, a Christmas party, to wish you a very happy Christmas. That here I am talking to you at length. Just as if I might be one of those relations of yours with special privileges.
Well, it can't be Aunt Harry, anyway.
Well, I shouldn't want to be anybody's Aunt Harry. I should hate them very much. But tell me, Scarlett, you know, I always have such great regard for him.
Anyhow,
I believe you've been reading our letters. I believe they have been published.
Is that so? I haven't
reached yet, but no. Things they do when you're dead and they think you can't retaliate.
Yes.
Well, you know, it's an extraordinary thing how people wait until you're dead before they just pull you to, well, of course they do pull you to pieces when you're alive, but they seem to, when you're dead, they think they can do exactly what they like with you.
That's
really doesn't really matter to me.
I don't think that's a very nice thing to do.
I suppose they think, you've had all you can get out of your life, now let us get something out of it. They just write and say all sorts of things, which sometimes, quite frankly, is very, one finds very amusing.
I expect
you're
leading a very interesting life.
I have to learn that. Don't you think I've been a double life? No, I'm leading a very happy existence. Yes, of course I am.
No.
That's still right.